Good morning and welcome to the Roundtable. I'm Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. 12 minutes after 9 o'clock, time to begin this morning's panel discussion on topics in the news. Joining us today is our own Alan Shartok, an associate editor of the Times Union, Mike Spain. No Rosemary today. She's off for the rest of the week. So it's a skeleton crew today.
I have lost a lot of weight.
Well, you're not looking skeletal yet, but nice to have everybody here. You can email us roundtable@wamc.org. roundtable@wamc.org. It's tax day. Did you file?
Oh, yeah. No, we filed, and I must say that we filed electronically through our very good but steep accountant.
Okay. Well, you can write that off.
Yeah, no, I'm sure he did that. I don't know what he does.
Yeah.
All I know is that I signed, and then he electronically files.
Right.
Electronically file, and
now, if you're audited, is part of the package that he will go and represent you?
I'm pretty sure that's true.
Well, okay. You hope it's true.
Because you signed, but you didn't read it.
But right. My brother-in-law, who hadn't done it for a couple of years for us, used to do it. One time we got audited, and he went in, and he came out with $500 more than he went in.
What?
Okay. Well, the chances of being audited
are pretty good.
Lower than ever.
Are lower than ever. That's exactly right. Fewer than 1% that would be audited. The IRS has asked for more, more funding from Congress so that they can step up their enforcement. They portray it as that for every dollar they spend on enforcement, meaning audits, it brings back $200 into the Treasury. Mm-hmm. So it seems like a good investment, but the Congress does not want to fund the IRS. It's politically unpopular, you know.
Yeah, I don't think there's anybody. I mean, I remember Rodney Chu was the tax guy here
in New York State.
New York State, mm-hmm. Under Cuomo. And he went to a man he described as his ancient Chinese grandfather and said...
This is Mario Cuomo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. He went, Rodney Chu went to his grandfather.
Right.
When he was offered the job as tax commissioner.
Right.
Oh, no, you can't take that job... Rodney, he said, because everybody hates the tax collector.
Yep. Well, that's true. They are disparaged by just about everybody, but it is an important part of our country. I mean, our nation would not exist if there were some way to capture revenue to fund our police, to fund government, to fund our armies.
To fund one bomb that might cost $1 million, or one plane that might cost several million dollars, or yet another submarine, which we certainly don't need, to keep people, busy, and to keep the complex going.
So you're not going to pay your taxes?
Yeah.
No, I pay my taxes, and I recognize...
I recognize
what you say as being correct in terms of everybody has to pay the taxes. But I really can't stand the fact that so much of what we pay goes for bad things. I mean, for me, if you're putting money into substance abuse or if you're putting money into, mental health, great, terrific. That's what we need in this society. But if you're putting money into things that have really no productive return.
Except for protecting us from invasion by hordes who might want our land and our resources, right?
I'm going to let that statement stand on its own, Ray, our wonderful listeners will have heard it. Could you just repeat it one more time?
Except to protect us from the hordes, that might take our resources and our land. You found it? Yes,
Dina.
Dina, our front office manager has found your iPod device, whatever it is.
Okay, so now
thank
we
you,
can
Dina.
Read, and now we can read people's letters.
Which is great, and thank you for that. Roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org, if you want to weigh in.
I would just like to answer that one more time, if I may.
What is that?
Well, you said what you
said. You said non-productive things.
Yeah, non-productive things. And protection, you said except for the hordes who would invade us.
Right. That's what defense is, right?
But where is the line drawn between what we need and what we're going to use? I mean, let's just take what's going on in Ukraine right now.
Okay.
Right? Are we going to use any of those machines, which cost millions and billions of dollars, against the Russians right now? I don't think so.
At the present time, it's not likely.
Mm-hmm. So here's the point. Eisenhower talked about the military-industrial complex. I hate to go blah, 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 but it's true.
Blah, blah, blah.
except that he was a Republican, like some other people I know.
Okay.
And he was, as my mom would say, the best of that kind, and he knew what the issue was. And I said, so do I, right now.
Okay, so the upshot is you will not be paying your taxes because of this, right?
You know full well that I said just the opposite.
Okay,
we know you're paying your taxes. Unfortunately, when they make tax cuts or when they cut programs in order to keep taxes lower, it's usually the treatment for drug addicts or the social programs or the infrastructure that gets cut. And the military doesn't get cut quite as much.
I wonder why that is. And I wonder whether their lobbyists give a lot of money to the, you know, to the folks. There was a piece in the paper today. I'm so sorry, Ray, for getting out of line here. But
how are you getting out of line?
Well, I'm diverting this.
Oh, no, go right ahead.
Please digress.
Yeah. There was a piece in the paper this morning about the cost of rent, which comes up every once in a while. You know, you're not supposed to spend more than one third of your income on rent.
Yeah.
But in many cities, New York.
90 cities, yes.
Yeah, 90 cities, the rent is too damn high.
It's over 30%. Yeah. Basically, the sort of the threshold for affordable housing is rent and utilities need to be 30% of your income.
Okay, so we know the rent is high.
Yeah.
We know that the state of New York, for example, keeps changing the rules so that people who have protections about landlords who raise their, you know, rent stability and the rest of it keep getting a better break. And then if you go and look and see whether the real estate industry has invested in people from the governor on down, you find that they have, big time. So then I would ask you whether or not one and one makes two.
Well, campaign contributions do translate into policy changes, let's face it. And everybody is lobbying for tax breaks and tax write-offs, and while others are fighting just the notion of taxes. But just bringing it back to today's deadline, it's a philosophical debate also of whether it is a good thing to pay taxes or a negative thing. And it came up, it came up during the 2008 presidential election when Sarah Palin was sort of portraying it as not what patriotic Americans want to do. And Tom Friedman, the great columnist for the New York Times, chimed in and said, but it is. It is the most patriotic thing you should do. As much as it's a burden and no one likes to pay them, you should be proud to pay them because it's not only does it support many of the negative programs that you just described, it supports everything else, too. And it's really a privilege, believe it or not, as an American to pay taxes. And it was very difficult to push that button on that electronic filing when you see how much you're paying. But nonetheless,
that's a great point about electronic filing. Now, in years past and to some extent this year, you always report on the post offices that are open till midnight.
Yeah,
but that whole paradigm is now changing with electronic filing. And I may be wrong, but I think New York State, they require
it now.
Yeah,
that's right.
To file electronically.
90%, is that what you just said? 90%, I think.
In New York State.
No.
Even nationally.
I think nationally 90% are now paying electronically.
Yeah, New York does require it. And if you buy one of the over-the-counter tax programs,
Turbos.
It's built right in. Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's built right in, the New York State one is. If you were going to do another state, you have to pay extra. But New York, because they require it, they just make it part of it. So it's advantageous.
Do you do your
bit.
Own taxes, Mike?
I do, but they're fairly simple. I don't have any real complicated businesses and write-offs and things.
For me, there is no such thing as simple.
Mm. Yeah. You know, this is the first time that I've seen this. And you guys are old-timers, so you probably can.
Why, thank you for that, Ray.
First time I've seen it, and yesterday it was all over the news on the crawls and everything. Basically, well, if you're sure you're getting a refund, you don't have to file by today.
That's correct.
That's the first I've seen that.
Oh, no, that's...
You have to get an extension.
Yeah, you have to file for an extension. But if you owe them money, they'll charge you interest and penalties.
Yeah.
But if they owe you money, you can just file an extension. That's right.
All right. Well, get your taxes in. It is tax day, unless you're in Boston, right? Then it's Patriots Day.
Patriots Day, and you get an extension.
Well, I think if you're in Massachusetts...
Right.
Yeah. We always used to get a break because I live in a good...
New York used to share that, but they no longer do.
I live in a good state.
Commonwealth. It's 9:21. It's the roundtable. Alan's here. Mike Spain is here. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. We'll take a break. We'll shift gears. We'll be back on the roundtable.
Support for WAMC comes from Stone Soup Concrete, East Hampton, Massachusetts. Specializing in concrete countertops, sinks, bathtubs, furniture, and architectural elements, serving the Pioneer Valley and New England. StoneSoupConcrete.com. Troy Savings Bank Music Hall, presenting Great Guitars with four acoustic guitarists, Martin Taylor, Frank Vignola, Vinny Raniolo, and Peppino D'Agostino, 8 p.m. Saturday, April 19th, troymusichall.org. And Oblong Books, presenting Conversations on the Hudson with author Nick Hand and Ken Green of the Hudson Valley Seed Library, Sunday, April 13th, 4 p.m. in Rhinebeck, oblongbooks.com.
The Roundtable on WAMC 922 on a Tuesday morning. Ray Graff in for Joe this week, and Alan Chartok is here. Mike Spain from the Times Union. It's our Roundtable panel. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. And Alan, you've got a hot one.
I do, Papa Ray. we have heard from Michael, who says, I agree. It's easy to knock military spending when our soil is well protected, and we have not been truly challenged in many years. Citizens see all the military equipment and ask why more, but fail to, quote, see the freedom we enjoy and the preparation required to protect. That's from Michael.
Michael, well done and well said. We appreciate
your
letters. Well,
you're a little bit higher on what he says than I am, but it is a matter of balance.
Yeah, I think we're all agreed on that.
You know, do you really need another nuclear submarine? You do not.
That's the rhetoric of the, you know, the fairly convincing rhetoric of the anti-nuclear people. How many, if you have enough nuclear bombs to destroy the world 1,000 times,
yeah,
why would you need?
Well, let's hope they don't do that. Now, speaking of military matters, let's go to some serious business at hand here from the New York Times. Ukraine says it has begun military operations in East. After days of failing to enforce its own ultimatums, Ukrainian government on Tuesday began what the president called a military operation to confront pro-Russian militants in the east of the country. The first indication that the operation represented more than just words this time was a modest Ukrainian military checkpoint established on a highway north and south of Sloviansk. Anybody help me out here? Sloviansk?
I can't help you out.
Which has been controlled by militants since Saturday. Now, you have Medvedev warning of the risk of bloodshed. So has this gone up another notch in your estimation?
Well, sure, it's gone up another notch. And the real problem here is that this is how these things start. Let's just say that the Ukrainians start firing at the Russians or the Russian stand-ins. Are you telling
me? That's a key point. The stand-ins are the president of Ukraine, the new president, says they're not just stand-ins. They're Russians here.
That's what he says.
Russians from Russia, not Russian-speaking Ukrainians,
right,
who are sympathetic.
Military Russians.
Yeah, but actually placed there by the Russian government to...
Right, right. And then the real question is, are we, as we have in the past, putting in people who will help out? We know
operatives from
Afghanistan Iraq and places like that. So, you know, I know that... So here's the point. Wars start, and they start easily, and then there's hell to pay. And I think there's a possibility of some real hell here.
But does Ukraine have any choice but to defend its cities against this incursion in whatever form it is, sort of this stealth Russian takeover that seems to be underway? It looks like they're trying to do another Crimea in some of these
Without
cities.
Question. Yeah. That is exactly what they're trying to do. It worked once. They used the same criteria for doing it. Mm-hmm. They put their troops on, they massed their troops on the border, and they say, we're going in. But really, when you examine this, what are the choices? Now, at what point do you fire does our group fire the first shot? Do they wait until things are, wait till they go towards a NATO country? Moldova is not. If they go to Moldova, what happens then? They have Russians in Moldova. Believe me, the same kind of thing is going to happen. If you think about it clearly, now I'm not paid by the Pentagon, I don't know, or the CIA, I don't know anything. All I know is, if you look at it really simply, it seems as if Putin's got most of what he needs to get his work done, and
to rebuild a federation similar to the old Soviet bloc.
And remember, he told them that. Mm-hmm. He told that to the Ukrainians when they wanted to make love to the West. He said, "Don't do it." And now we know what he meant by "don't do it."
To show how interconnected everything is, though, and to maybe illustrate the pressure Putin is under from another angle, Russian stock market took a dive Tuesday morning, which would have been a while, hours ago, but it took a dive on fears of war. So when does the economic picture start to force Putin's hand?
Well, if you listen to NPR or to the BBC this morning, you heard again and again and again about the polling in Russia that the people are really with Putin, and big time.
Not only that, hundreds of thousands in Ukraine, even acknowledged by the president of the new president of Ukraine, that there are hundreds of thousands of pro-Russians involved in this uprising, for lack of a better term. So there is some sentiment, you know, in-house there.
And it extends even further than that. There are people who say, when they are asked, one poll we heard about this morning was, when is there too much propaganda, pro-Russian propaganda? And with a mighty voice, the Russian people yell, no.
No, one of the
well,
best.
what if you were to change the facts just to support your position? Is that wrong? No.
There was an incredible story a couple of weeks ago about Russian propaganda and the influence of the Russian Ukrainians. When a couple of weeks ago they reported that The Simpsons is very popular in Ukraine.
Oh, really?
The cartoon series. And they have a Ukraine version of them that play on TV, and they have a Russian dubbed version of them.
You're
and
kidding
a
me.
Few years ago they were able to push out the Ukraine version, and now they just play the Russian version. And the Ukraine version apparently was a lot funnier and a lot better translation. But the they seemed to capture it better, and they played both, and you could almost hear the Marge and Homer kind of jokes going on in the Ukraine version, but it was very flat in the Russian version. And
that's so interesting because, you know, you probably don't know you're talking to one of the great Simpson fans in Ray Graff.
No, well, I watched the first 8 or 9 years when I was a young man, but I haven't watched it really.
But the point is they're embedding
with references.
I mean, they're taking over this. I mean, they're doing this through cultural, you know, just basically moving into the culture. I mean, embedding themselves into the culture in a way that it's not black and white anymore.
And then there was this study that just said, the new line is it was precipitous to stop communism. This is on the part of the Russians. Precipitous to stop communism. Precipitous to stop, and Gorbachev, they're thinking, is being mentioned now in his 80s, should be brought up on charges for traitorousness, for being a traitor.
Well, the times they are a-shonging, as a great Frenchman once said. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org is our email address. Alan Shartok is here. Mike Spain from the Times Union. Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. We'll break for news, and we'll be back. Thought I was in the seventh inning stretch of a Mets game there for a minute there. That's right. Yeah. The great organist for the Mets, whose name eludes me at the moment. You remember her?
No.
What was her name?
No, I don't.
I should know it. She played for the Mets for years. It's the round table, and we just started and we digress.
The last man I liked was Casey Stengel. What can I tell you?
9:36, it's the round table panel. Roundtable at WAMC.org is the email address. Alan Shartok is here. Mike Spain from the Times Union. I'm Ray Graff, reminiscing about Mets of years gone by. And Alan, we have some email.
Well, we have a very important email.
Correction.
We made a boo-boo, huh?
Yeah, we did. Patriot says Abbott 7. Patriot's Day is Monday, April 21st this year, not today.
So you got to file.
You have to file your taxes today in Massachusetts. Let me read that again.
Yes, for our legal department.
Yes. Patriot's Day is Monday, April 21st this year, not today.
Okay.
You have to file your taxes today in Massachusetts.
All right. Well, well said, and we thank you for that correction. We appreciate it.
Well, it's very important.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
And James Hill, I have no problem in military spending, but when our spending is more than the next 25, 26 countries, and at least 20 of them are allies, why are we spending so much? Spending on updating hardware that is needed is okay, like how our troops not brig geared in the Middle East. Well, I don't know what that word is. But when a congressman pushes through a legislature construction of 20 to 30 new fighter jets that cost millions of dollars that the Air Force General says they don't need or want just because it gets the congressman who wants votes, not sure of the number of jets. In parentheses, how many military bases do we have around the world that cost us taxpayers in allied countries? Okay, we need to cut back, he said.
And
then there's another one from Jeremy who says, Alan, I'll keep it brief. Just take a breath before reading. Bombs and planes won't help in Ukraine, but that's only a fraction of the military items our tax dollars are spent on. Rest assured, while our planes and bombs are idle on the ground, the CIA shadow ops and the kind of underhanded U.S. meddling in foreign affairs is neither idle nor cheap, nor is it listed anywhere as an item in the Pentagon's budget. We as a people may never gain control of the things our military does in our name. Unfortunately, thanks for a great job show. And then says, great job, Ray.
Well, thank you.
Well, I agree with him.
I appreciate that very much.
And then JTB says, I believe the U.S. has around a dozen or more aircraft carriers and have just built or are building another one, the most expensive ship ever built. Many strategists consider aircraft carriers to be white elephants, sitting targets, and an entire fleet of support ships are required to protect it. China's building of its only carrier is part of our justification. Always is, China. Always. Why do we need another? When I talk to the two congressmen, a Republican and a Democrat, by the way, who represent...
China has one.
They always say that because China has one.
Don't they have an old, like, Russian one or something?
Yeah.
refurbished.
Okay, and then, is there anything else I can see here? No.
Okay, so there was an interesting piece at the end of the NPR News.
Yep.
And I have not seen this. Mike knew of it. Basically, the upshot is there was a study, National Academy of Sciences, I believe, said when your blood sugar is low, you get cranky. That was basically the bottom line. And more domestic arguments begin when blood sugar is low.
But the methodology that they came to this conclusion was the most bizarre. What they did was they lined up a bunch of couples and they had them... take dolls, voodoo dolls, and pins, and they said each night before you go to bed, put an appropriate number of pins, whatever you feel like, into the doll that represents your partner, and then keep track of, and then while you measure that, keep track of your blood sugar. You know, so you have two different metrics going on.
Right.
Pins in the
doll.
Both
involving pins, oddly
enough.
Yes,
that's correct. Yeah, interestingly, and so at the end of the 21-day study, they found a correlation between low blood pressure and more
pins. Blood sugar.
Low blood sugar. Yeah, that's a good correction. And the number of pins that you pin in your partner. So what they're basically saying is that when people have low blood sugar, when they haven't eaten, when they're hungry, they tend to get stressed, some people more than others, and they tend to get really angry and they have arguments. So the suggestion is that, you know, keep a nice granola bar around, and if you're having a difficult conversation with your partner, perhaps just invite them to have this and maybe have one yourself, and it might go better.
So does that mean by extension diabetics are jolly?
I ask the same question, basically, because diabetes becomes an intervening variable in all of this. Yeah.
It doesn't address that in the USA Today story that I'm reading from, but that does it. But they do have a very funny picture, which none of you can see on the radio, of the little doll with pins all through it.
Huh. I have a voodoo doll at the desk.
Well, you know, maybe you should
look like me.
It looks a little like you, oddly enough.
I thought that was a bobblehead doll.
No, you can't get the pins in that. I tried.
That was a shot, by the way. Let's find out what the blood sugar your blood sugar is right now.
I'm in a great mood. My blood sugar's
perfect.
It's got to be good, right?
Got to be.
I'm pleased as punch. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org if you want to complain. roundtable@wamc.org. Okay, on to serious business here, and from the pages of the venerable Times Union, and this dovetails nicely with what we're seeing today, which is flood warnings over a large portion of our listening area today. And yesterday, there was a symposium, if you will, on extreme weather, a forum. And this was covered by Brian Fitzgerald in your paper, Mike.
That's right. It was a forum sponsored by the Rockefeller Institute. It was at the University of Albany, and there were many, many meteorologists there. And the discussion was that the Northeast, more than any part of the country, has become a hot spot for record rain and flooding in recent years. And in addition to that, they're more frequently major storms, and they're lasting longer, and soil is wetter than ever, which does have an impact if we don't have a period of drying out. And the meteorologists are all talking about what to do about this. And a lot of the discussion is about how to prepare for what is expected to be increased changes in our weather patterns, and we've already seen it.
One of the interesting points mentioned is According to David Valley, the head hydrologist at the National Weather Service Northeast River Forecast Center, rainstorms have increased in the Northeast by 74% in recent years. Now, I just wonder what he means by recent years.
Yeah, it's not clear, but he does point to the flooding along riverbeds and creek sides, that look kind of flooding we saw in Schoharie County and Greene County, you know, during the aftermath of Tropical Storm Irene, you know, back in 2011. And just last summer out in Fort Plain along the Mohawk River, you know, you saw some flooding. And David Valley also predicts that this is going to be over a wider area over time. And it's causing a lot of, concern about what governments can do, what kind of mitigation can take place. We're past the point of just saying, well, we have to be more careful about whatever's causing this. We have to really begin to prepare for what's inevitably going to be more of these kinds of instances, according to the meteorologists. And these are the people that predict the weather.
And that's in today's paper, correct?
Yes, that's today.
I would just say that it's not either or. I think we have to do both.
Absolutely.
All right. And also in the paper, now, in addition to being tax day, there is a new gun regulation on the books.
Yes, that's right. It's
in New York State.
It's the deadline for owners of what is technically an assault rifle. If you own an assault rifle in New York State, you are required to, by today, either register it with the state police or modify the firearm so that it no longer is considered an assault weapon. And that might be like grinding off the threads at the end of it so you can't stick a bayonet on it, or something.
Well, isn't there also a thing about how many bullets can
Yes, and the magazine that
that's
is
already in
to it.
Isn't that already in place?
Right, but I mean, whether you can have these magazines can help play into the definition. The New York Safe Act has its own website where it actually gives you the points that would help define a firearm as being an assault weapon. And it's illegal to buy an assault weapon now, but if you previously owned one before the SAFE Act went into effect last year in 2013, you need to register it. You're required by law to register it with the state police. It's a simple one-page form. They keep it confidential. It's not available under the Freedom of Information Law. And they're not even saying how many people have already filed, and they're not going to say how many.
Why?
Well, it's part of the confidentiality associated
with
it.
Even just the aggregate numbers?
Even the aggregate numbers, which seems ridiculous because it doesn't tell who has them. It just says how many. And there's estimates ranging from several hundred thousand. The state police have estimated several hundred thousand exist. Others have estimated there might be millions in the hands of New Yorkers. And it's unlikely that millions are going to sign up. There's campaigns urging people to resist it by ignoring it. And it does constitute a misdemeanor, although police are given a lot of flexibility. You could say, I didn't realize I needed to do it, and they would probably forgive it. But some sheriffs...
But God forbid...
Yes.
Something happens with your weapon. You haven't complied with the law. I think there could be consequences for you.
Well, it does. If they're there for some other reason and they discover this, you know, it could be consequential.
Well, no, I'm not even talking about that.
Or someone gets your weapon and uses it in a crime.
Somebody uses it and you haven't registered it. I mean, there are those of us who believe in obeying the law, even if we don't like the law. Mm-hmm. I have thought all along that while I have many issues with Andrew Cuomo, the Moreland Act Commission, this and that, I thought that what he did on the SAFE Act was exactly the right thing to do.
That was courageous. He spent a lot of political capital, too.
He did,
especially
since he was so intent on getting upstate votes. Yeah. So we saw the bump that he took. Clearly, for one of the shrewdest and most Machiavellian of all politicians, he had to know. He had to know that it was going to cost him.
Oh, yeah.
And
they do like to point out that polls, like a recent Siena poll, show that 63% of the respondents statewide are in favor of the limits on firearms that are included in the SAFE Act, and 32% are opposed. And that's about the same as it was.
Well, what's the upstate-downstate?
52% are in favor of it upstate, and it's 45% are opposed.
Well, that's significant.
So it is. It is an upstate downstate issue.
Well, this discussion dovetails extremely well with a great piece in today's paper, in the today's Times Union, called entitled Growing Pains in Gun Groups. And I tell you what, let's take a short break, and then let's discuss this, because it's a fascinating piece in today's Times Union. You are listening to The Roundtable. The email address is roundtable@wamc.org. Roundtable@wamc.org. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Binghamton University, working to prepare students for careers in advanced education by striving to foster curiosity, growth, and discovery on campus and abroad. Binghamton.edu. Mohonk Preserve, New Paltz, presenting the Rock the Ridge 50-Mile Challenge for runners, walkers, hikers on May 3rd, sponsored by I Love New York and Ulster County Alive. RockTheRidge50.org for registration. And TSL, Time and Space Limited in Hudson, New York, screening the Galapagos Affair, Satan Came to Eden, and Particle Fever, the launching of the Large Hadron Collider. TimeandSpace.org.
Welcome back to our little program. It's the Roundtable on WAMC. Tuesday morning, 9:49 is the time. Alan Shartok is here, Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain, and Ray Graff in for Joe Donahue. And this one, Mike, from your paper today, Growing Pains in Gun Groups. I'll read you the first paragraph, and then you take it from there. Tom King, the president of New York State's largest and oldest pro-gun group, has never had a bigger pulpit, and he's never had so many of his fellow believers yelling at him.
That's right. The story today by our reporter, Jordan Carlio Evangelist, is it just focuses on how supporters of the Second Amendment movement, you know, to the right to bear arms, are really split on how to deal with this SAFE Act. They're all opposed to it. Some are appealing for moderation, and they want to appeal it in the courts. Tom King, who heads the New York State Rifle and Pistol Association, is in that camp. Already they have been successful in having federal judges vacate part of the SAFE Act when it comes to how many bullets can be in a gun magazine. But the others Jordan compares this to sort of the splits in the Republican Party between the Tea Party people and maybe the mainstream Republicans, or the Democrats and the Occupy Wall Street people. These kinds of factions happen with every political movement, and it's kind of wild right now. Some more newer groups that have sprung up since the SAFE Act are advocating using blistering rhetoric, and they're advocating for things like, prepare for war, gun owners, and, you know, don't comply with the law, and, you know, we have to repeal it. When, Alan, you can certainly speak to the political reality of ever appealing the SAFE Act. Is there any chance of that happening in this?
Well, there is always a chance.
Any reasonable chance.
As you saw, Mike, there have been provisions in it which they've been able to eat away at. But I do think that, there are some people who this has become so salient with that they lose all sense of perspective or reason. We're not going to call names here because it's ridiculous. We just don't do that here. But some of them are really at the end stretch reality, as far as I'm concerned. But we all have to obey the law, and I think they do too.
Well, it's coming down to sort of this philosophical divide within the Second Amendment people, you know, with Tom King's group, which is an affiliate of the NRA, and the one supported by Carl Paladino, the unsuccessful candidate for governor in the last gubernatorial race, and he's supporting the Shooters Committee on Public Education, or SCOPE, which
That's funny, SCOPE.
SCOPE was a major sponsor of the rally back on April 1st over at the Capitol, where Donald Trump came, and Paladino was there introducing him as the next governor of New York. Meanwhile, Rob Astorino, the Westchester County executive and the announced Republican candidate for governor, is supported by Tom King's group.
And he is taking an anti-gun position in his campaign, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, they're all opposed to the SAFE Act, but they're opposed in different measures, I guess.
I think the way that you described it as...
Well, Jordan Carlio Evangelist really put it together.
As rifts in, let's say, the far right or the far left, it's a very apt way of looking at it. here's a paragraph much further down in the column or the article. Before the rally, King stoked anger with a memo outlining his belief that such displays have outlived their usefulness and amount to preaching to the choir. So basically, he's almost taking a John Boehner stance with regard, you know, with Boehner's regard to the Tea Party and saying, hey, let's pull back a little bit.
Yeah.
And so there's anger there against him for that.
Oh, yeah. He's as Jordan points out, the membership has doubled in the last year
yep.
for his organization, and yet he's getting so much flack from people within the group and outside the group who want him to be more militant. It actually is a good comparison to Boehner, who's trying to balance the traditional Republicans in Congress with the more extreme to the
before
right.
it gets completely out of hand and yeah. to protect his own people.
Sure.
Boehner, as the leader, has to protect his own people, and I think there's some of that here, too.
And yet he has to consider the impact and the influence of the people on the far right. So it's a tough balancing act that Tom King has and all the people within this Second Amendment movement have. It's a pretty interesting analysis.
We only have a couple of minutes here, and then we'll get to some more letters, but wanted to touch on this. I know, Alan, you spoke about this in your commentary at 7:37. The Snowden leaks have won the Pulitzer Prize for two news groups, and that's a big deal.
I think it's gutsy on the part of the Pulitzer people. Well, Mike knows a lot about this also, and our friend Rex, of course, has sat on that Pulitzer group in the past. I think it's gutsy because, you know, there are people in this country who truly have leveled a finger at Snowden and said, you're a traitor, and you should be prosecuted, and you should spend the rest of your time. Meantime, The Washington Post and The Guardian, a British paper, get Pulitzer Prizes for doing it. I have always believed, still believe, you can't have a democracy unless you have knowledge. How can you possibly vote if you got an NSA that's collecting data on people and they don't even know it? That's part of the political process. And that's what I find so disturbing here.
Yeah, the interesting thing about the Snowden leaks is that it has brought people from the right, far right, and the far left actually in agreement that this is preposterous, that the government is invading people's privacy at such a level, and they wouldn't have known about it unless this guy had become a whistleblower. Regardless of that, it's important journalism to report the findings that or report the data that he released.
Because, Mike, there are some people who say that you're a traitor you're a traitor if you in fact report that information.
Some of the very same people are the ones that are upset about what the information is. I mean, it seems like a contradiction to me. They're upset when they hear about it, but they're mad that they heard about it, but they did want to know about it, so they're kind of tortured by this.
So is this prize just because they had the courage to release this, or was there some journalism involved?
The Guardian did a lot of analysis of it, and they've been using their judgment. They haven't just released everything. They've sort of dodged questions about that when they were in town to receive the Polk Awards, which is another great journalism award for which the Guardian was honored recently for their work.
Okay, and the email address here is roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Just a few minutes left. Alan, what's in the mailbag?
Okay, well, there's a lot, actually.
Okay, all right.
Parker says, it was mentioned on air today that New York State requires that tax returns be filed electronically. Not true.
Okay.
The DOTF site provides two snail mail mailing addresses, Opney for returns with payments and one for returns without, and
all
that's
right.
from Parker.
All right.
And then Michael says, how does registering assault weapons prevent some lunatic from using one? We need mental health registration, says Michael.
Okay, now how would you do that? Well, wait a minute.
What?
That's a kind of a
Well, that's part of the
statement.
SAFE Act also. Mental health practitioners are supposed to pass through the pipeline the identities of patients who they feel might be unbalanced and also might be prone to violence. How they're going to know that, I don't know.
Well, many of them are mental health people are concerned about the distrust that it fosters when you...
Oh, sure. In fact, some of them are not complying, too, with that aspect
okay.
of the SAFE Act, which is a parallel
And then Michael says... did we read that? Yeah, we did.
Okay.
And then Ryan says, I've been listening for a few years now. I always wondered if there might be occasional tension between the commentators with PhDs and the commentators without PhDs. Perhaps you should keep some snacks on hand.
That's funny.
You think so? I generally like the mix between local and national and international news, but I sometimes think that those on the program with PhDs perhaps express opinions on subjects outside of their expertise with little or no authority. I should mention that Mike Spain consistently provides facts, which I assume are facts that I always appreciate his input. Ryan in Amherst. I love to hear from Amherst. And then Emily says, "Hi, Ray. I grew up going to Shea Stadium and lived in New York City as a 20-something in the 1980s and had another run of frequent attendance. Years later, my memory is not the precision machine it once was, but was the organist who played at the bowl games for years, maybe decades, named Jane Jarvis?"
Indeed. I wanted to say Joan Payson, but she was the first owner. Jarvis, yeah. Great
Unless
organist.
Joan Payson doubled. They used to put her name on the scoreboard for applause at some point during the game, and I remember seeing Jane Jarvis, Shea's melody, Queen, Does This Ring Any Bells?
It certainly does, and all my Mets fans friends are going to castigate me for not remembering her name initially, but well done.
Well, she played the organ better than most people played on the team.
Hmm. All right, then. Listen, we're going to wrap it up on that shot, and we'll get Alan a snack here because obviously his blood sugar has dropped. We appreciate your email, roundtable@wamc.org. Alan, thank you for being here, my friend.
Well, as you know, Ray, I'm a great admirer of yours, even without a PhD.
All right, sir. And Mike Spain, thanks for being here, and we'll be looking forward to some of the great articles in the TU today. And keep up the good work, man. You going to be back in this week, or are you done?
I think I'm here Thursday and Friday.
Wow. Well, this is great.
I'm for Mike being here every day.
Well, fair enough. Truly. And that's where we will leave it. Hour two on the way.